And Terry said, would you pick up some ice while you're out? So I did my errands. I went by a little place where I normally buy ice, and it was not working that day, one of those coin-operated deals. So I'm like, where do I go from here? And I thought about several places. Then Sonic is closed, so I'll go over there to Sonic. Terry loves the ice from Sonic. We'd bought ice there before. Go over there, push the button. Can I help you? I'd like two bags of ice. And the lady says, we don't sell ice on hot days. Now, and you're tempted to say, so if I came in February, I could buy all the ice I wanted. But when you think about it, it makes perfect sense. It really does. They're wanting to make sure that they have enough ice so they can fill all the soft drink cups that they're going to be selling during the day. And so they don't know exactly how much they're going to need. And so the policy is on a really hot day that they won't sell bags of ice. But it does have that oxymoron kind of feel to it. You know, it's too hot to sell ice. Oxymoron is a figure of speech in which apparently contradictory terms appear in conjunction. Things like an open secret, seriously funny, the living dead, an unbiased opinion. I like that one a lot. How about an original copy, a peacekeeper missile, an exact estimate, and of course the one that we all think of, jumbo shrimp. Those things, just the dichotomy of that is just so obviously there. The reason I bring that out today is I want to look at a passage throughout this month. We're going to be looking at some passages from the 12th chapter of Romans. Paul writes Romans this theological treatise that is complex and it's layered. There are places where it's difficult to understand. And then as he gets toward the end, the final fourth of the letter, he shifts over to practical application. And he's going from really something that's very difficult to understand to something that is extremely easy to understand. And he makes the transition in Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. And that's the passage that I'd like for us to look at together this morning. Help, help. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Now, if you were, if it was, maybe I would say, pick the oxymoron that's in that passage. It's living sacrifice. The people who were initially exposed to that passage would have found that term to be very confusing. Sacrifices were things that had died or had been killed in order to be a sacrifice. Or a sacrifice was something that wasn't living. And so when Paul uses this term, living sacrifice, I feel certain that they were like, oh, wait a second. How do you make a sacrifice something that's living? And Paul, of course, is going to explain that in the rest of these two verses. And then he's going to amplify that as he goes through the rest of chapter 12. Living sacrifice. This passage created quite a buzz in the 1970s. The New International Version came out. And the translation here in the end of verse 1 was, this is your true and proper worship, as we read this morning. It's interesting, the version in 1973 is true and proper worship. The NIV's translation in 2011 is true and proper worship. It changed in between, and 84 says something different there. But up until that point in time, if you were looking at the King James Version or the American Standard Version, it used, King James would say, your reasonable service. American Standard would say your spiritual service. And we had kind of, as a group, separated worship and service. And some of you who were adults at that time may remember that you could go into many church buildings and it would say, enter to worship, leave to serve. And what Paul is saying to the Romans is that they're the same. Your worship is what you do with every moment of your life. And it was good for us to come to the place where we started to understand that there wasn't a compartmentalization between our spiritual lives and our secular lives. They're the same. We represent God at all moments. Our lives are here to glorify God at all moments. And everything we do in every single instance of our lives is designed to worship and glorify God. It's not divided up into where we are or what day of the week it is or how we find ourselves at that particular moment. Radical Christianity is how some people measure it or label it. And radical Christianity is something that has tremendous power. There are folks who want to see extreme forms of Christianity. They want to see that person who's doing the kind of things with their lives that cause them to stand out against the crowd. They can look and say, okay, that person is real. I don't know if this is true or not. I've read it several times. But Gandhi is reported to have said, I would have become a Christian if I had ever met one. That's a tremendous indictment. He knew a lot of people that claimed to be Christians, but he never really experienced somebody who was a radical Christian to the point that their life was literally a living sacrifice. How do you define a living sacrifice? Well, I think moms are a pretty good example of living sacrifices. The little boy goes to church, goes to school, and his math teacher is trying to teach him a little, some addition. And he says, okay, you got four people in your family, your mom and your dad and you and your sister. It's time for dessert. How many pieces is mom going to cut the pie into? And the little boy says, four. And she says, that's good. And she says, now, say your neighbors came by. And they have a mom and a dad and a sister and a brother. You know, how many pieces is your mom going to cut the pie into? And the little boy says, seven. And the teacher says, no, it would be eight. The little boy says, you don't know my mom. She wouldn't cut herself a piece of pie if that was going to keep everybody from having a lesser piece. That's what he saw when he saw his mother. And so many of us, when we look at our mothers, really do see an example of sacrificial living. They are living sacrifices. And they're oftentimes, Terry and I like the phrase, give like a thoughtless prodigal your all and then tremble lest you've done too little. And that's really what we're talking about here. And we look to moms and we say, okay, I get an idea of what God really has in mind for thee on this particular issue. I'm going to hit a couple of points real quickly here. The first is that living sacrifice. Let's go to the second one. Do not conform, but be transformed. And I don't have time to develop all the point like I'd like to, but I just want to say simply, you can't be living in the world and be a living sacrifice. You can't take your cues from the world and be a living sacrifice. You can't accept all the information of the world and be a living sacrifice. And Paul is saying, you're going to have to be changed from the world. You're going to have to go to a different place. You're going to have to listen to a different voice. You're going to have a different perspective in your life. Well, how do you get that different perspective? I'm going to skip some passages here. The renewing of your mind. We have a different mindset. We start in a new place. If you look at the passage in John chapter 13, and I like this one so very much. This is right before Jesus washes the disciples' feet. He says, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. Jesus had a perspective that allowed him to understand what his role was, what was taking place. He had confidence in the fact that he had come from God, and he was going back to God. In Philippians chapter 2, verse 5, in your relationship with one another have the same mindset as Jesus Christ. If we're looking for the mindset, then we go back to the John 13:3 verse. We know where we came from, and we know where we're going. And because of that, I'm able to be sacrificial in the way I approach things, because it's not about what I can acquire here, what I can hang on to here. It's about where I'm headed and what my ultimate goal is. This morning, you might look at that idea and say, I'd like to be a living sacrifice, but how do I do that? The important place to start is by understanding that we don't make that happen. God is the one who makes us the living sacrifice. So what's my role in it? My role in it is to empty me of me. If I can empty myself as much as possible for my own self-interest, then God can fill that vessel to the place where we do what He wants to do, at least in a stronger way than what we're doing now. And when that happens, we become literally living sacrifice. My challenge to you this week would be, do something every day that allows you to be sacrificial. Now, a lot of times when we think about being a living sacrifice, we think about this overall change that's going to take place just in a blink of an eye, and it doesn't happen that way. It's a developmental thing. But we begin by practicing being sacrificial. And maybe the first thing you think of is money, but it's not always money at all. Maybe for this week you're going to let a coworker be right. That's a sacrifice sometimes. You may have that coworker that's pretty difficult to live with. And for this week, I'm just going to say, whatever comes up, I'm going to let it go. I'm not going to do that. There may be somebody that really, really needs you to listen to them. And that becomes burdensome and wearisome. And you say, no, for this week, I'm going to listen. I'm going to give that person my undivided attention. There may be that homeless person that you walk by every day that you're going to change the way you respond there. They may be a family member. There's an endless number of ways that I can say and propose to myself, I'm going to make this shift so that I can do something practical and superficial in this situation. I'm going to allow God to fill me up and use me in a sacrificial way. The last part of that passage says simply, then you will be able to attest and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will. I'm convinced that the vast majority of us want to be what God wants us to be. We don't always succeed, and frequently we make mistakes in going in that direction. But our goal in life is to be what God has in mind for us to be. God says, through Paul, I should give you a little hint here. Focus on being a living sacrifice. Get your mindset where you're not living here, you live someplace else. Understand that you've got to be different from everybody else. And when you do that, you arrive at His good, pleasing, perfect will in your life. I hope that you'll think about it. I hope that you'll pray about it. I hope that you'll find some places in your life in the next few days to literally practice some form of sacrifice as we empty ourselves and allow God to guide our lives. This morning, I'll extend an invitation. It's not mine. It's a heaven's invitation. And if you need to respond to God's invitation, we'd be glad to facilitate that as we stand and sing together.